Welcome to A Day in the Why, a podcast where I talk with fascinating folks about the jobs they've held, the things they've learned, and how well those line up with their values and goals. You may just learn something, but I hope you'll at least laugh along with us as we dive into the mistakes we've made, the lessons we've learned, and the secrets behind how we got where we are today and where we're going tomorrow. Welcome to A Day in the Why, episode number 4, where we explore what our guests do for a living, their road to that role, and how it aligns with their values and goals. Welcome to the show, Jody.
Thank you for having me.
I've followed your career since we met at an AIGA event years and years ago, and then just seeing you around town. Our listeners should know that you are of a slightly taller than average height, to the extent that I recall you passed out business cards to random folks who came up to inform you of said height.
Right, right. I've given out, I think, around 400 to 500 cards in about 6 years. That's how often I get asked about my height.
Now, do people usually ask you about it? Just how tall are you, or wow, you're tall?
Both. Okay. It'll usually be, wow, how tall are you? Or, oh my God, you're a big old guy. It's like, really? I'm big. Thanks for letting me know. And that's kind of what the card says. It's, thanks for letting me know. You're very observant.
Well, I appreciate you making some time today to share some insights with me and our listeners about what you're doing right now and how you got there. To start off, can you kind of just give us an overview of what exactly you're doing these days?
So I always struggle with what to call what I do. Am I a small business owner? Am I a full-time freelancer? Whichever it is, however I'm feeling that day, it's called Feral Giant. And it's mostly graphic design, illustration, social media consultation. But I also do photography, video, SEO, web design, podcast producing. My joke is I will babysit your kids if it gets me money. So I finally realized if it's creative or digital, I can do it. That's the best way to tell people is I get bored a lot. So focusing on one thing, like I'm just going to do branding, would make me pull out whatever hair I am lacking.
Sure.
Right now.
Now, do you think that's that boredom is driven by just getting tired of doing the same thing, or because there's so much out there that you just have this abiding need to experience it all?
Yes.
Both. I think it's all the above.
I think it's whenever I started in design, I started so early that I hit a point to where I was pretty good and I was 19. So it was like, oh, well, I need to learn how to do marketing to back up what I do. So I would start doing marketing and learn marketing and PR and promotion and all that. And then I would go back to design. But then over time, it was as opportunities arose, I was like, yeah, I'm going to take this opportunity as it comes to me. Photography, it was part of the program when I was in school. And then later on, I had the camera. I was like, I have the tool right here. I need to learn how to use the tool. And that's kind of how it comes. So I like doing all of it, because I think a lot of that stuff works together. It's all synergy. It all just works together. So why not learn how to do everything?
And the more you do something, of course, the more it becomes kind of muscle memory.
Oh, yeah.
At which point you can confidently offer that as part of your skill set without even really thinking about it. You know?
Right. But I like to joke because I like barely graduated high school. I went to a very rough high school. And there was a point where I was mapping out what a social media plan would look for a company. And I was talking to a project manager and we're on the whiteboard and we're doing all the things and I'm writing everything. I was like, well, if they choose this tier, we'll do that. And I got to the end and I went, brruh. I don't know how I just did that. Like, it's so ingrained in me that I was like, I can't explain how I got there. I just know I got there. Like, if you need to explain to you why I would choose this X company to go on YouTube as opposed to Instagram, I'm sure I can come up with something, but yes, muscle memory is the best way to put it. It's just years of doing it. And
black box, right?
Yeah.
There's a black box in there. And
yeah,
you put a bunch of inputs in and you get out what you get out.
Right. 100%. 100%. Yeah.
So you mentioned podcasting before we started recording. I said I knew you had a podcast, but it sounds like you've had a number of them. Can you share along that line?
I think all total, I have had 5. And right now I'm down to one that's published, one that's back that I've recorded a bunch of episodes. It's like backlog. and then one that I would like to restart. But I did the first one, I think I did. I'm trying to remember if I did this before Ramblin' Man. I did one called Southern Charm with a buddy of mine who had moved to Minnesota when he was 19 from Florida. And I was reintroducing him to Southern culture in a positive light. And we would talk about music and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it was great. But you talk about that guy, Michael May, I think has 8 podcasts. So he was very much like, we want to record every third Sunday at 9 p.m. I was like, I can't do that. Sometimes I have plans. I can't. So we couldn't make it work. I would love for him and I to do that one again. But then Why Knox, I did for Visit Knoxville, which was just the positive aspects about Knoxville. If people weren't from here, what brought them here, all that. I would like to bring that one back. It's a lot more short form and to the punch. But the big one is Ramblin' Man that I about to hit episode 100. Long form podcast that I find somebody knowledgeable on the topic and we talk about that. But we can meander and ramble wherever the conversation goes. It's including talking about Tinder for 20 minutes. Talking about, like, it's crazy the side conversations we've had on Ramblin' Man. Yeah, those are the, and I hate my own voice. But me doing Ramblin' Man was born out of having interesting friends. I was like, nobody's going to tell their story. You're going to hear about this guy when you sit next to him at a bar or a restaurant, and then you're going to be like, what did that guy know about? And you'll forget. So I would rather find the people, record with them, and have it permanently on record.
And there's something about, it's funny, in the last episode we talked a little bit about being interesting and being interested. And how those right. are two qualities that are intertwined and necessary for someone to be, well, interesting.
Yeah.
You have to have a hunger, a thirst to learn new things and be exposed to new things. And in the process of doing that, you become interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a set of rules that I always tell everybody, you know, it's the standard bearer. Like, you can cuss. If we need to take a break, we can take a break. Don't worry, I'll get us back on topic. But one of the biggest things I say is, don't use one word where a paragraph will suffice. Because I was like, I need you to talk.
Right.
Because I had one guy that every question I would ask him a 3-sentence long question, and he would go, pause. And there was one point where I looked at my watch. I was like, how long have we been going? We've been going 3 minutes. And it feels like an hour. So that episode was about 35 minutes long. And that was a pain in the butt. To even get it to 35 minutes, I was like, dude, just talk, brother. Just, you can talk. You know how to do this. You're interested in this. You're good at this. Talk. That's not him. That's not him.
This is kind of a weird set of things that you're doing to describe as a career, right? It's, I guess weird is maybe not the right word, but weird, strange, lucky, you know, fortunate. I mean, it's fun to think you've carved this out for yourself and it's working well for you. Or is it?
Hold on. I'm going to knock on wood when you say that. I'm just thinking back to, there's a TikTok I saw. I'm going to go a little dirty for a second. Of some older gentleman applying suntan oil to a woman with a healthy backside's butt. And then it cuts away to a, like, 25-year-old young man. And he goes, where was this guy at on career day? I could have done this. And that's what went through my head when you said that. I was like, yeah, if somebody had to be set up at a booth at a career day to explain where I was at now, I would think they were on drugs. I would think they were tripping at balls on acid or something. Being like, wait, so I'm going to talk to people for a living? That doesn't make sense.
This is a thing?
Yeah, this is. What's a podcast? What's a pod? Like 2001 Space Odyssey? I'm going to look at the posters on the wall. And it's like how? Everybody who works for themselves struggles all the time. And I don't know how to say this. I know I'm going to come off like a dick when I say this. But I also sometimes have to explain to some people. I was like, I'm also a single. So if the rent, if the mortgage is not getting paid, it's on me. Like, I got no backup. It's just me. So that's something I think a lot of people don't take into account. Now, I'm also a single dude with no kids. So I can fly. I can eat a lot of ramen. Actually, I hate ramen. I can eat a lot of spaghetti with meat sauce. Like,
But you have a lot of control over yourself, your own behaviors, your own spending, etc. Right. And you don't have to support a family.
Right. But also on the flip side is if I have a dry month or two, like I'm screwed. Like I don't know. That's a weird balancing act to talk to people about, because that can get a little sticky on people getting defensive. I was like, but no, just think about that, because there are some people I know that started in creative endeavors going out on their own, and they've talked to me about, oh no, it's just all been sunshine and rainbows. I was like, okay, if you were having to do this wedding photography on your own and you did not have a wife, you know, somebody to support you, would you still be able to? Oh, hell no.
Okay.
Just think about that when you're talking to people. Also, a lot of social media is bullshit, so... like a lot of it may look like
facade.
A lot of it may look like flossing. I've tried to really make my voice be a more authentic, always authentic to me. So if I'm struggling, I'll talk about struggling and how it's not easy. But a lot of what I end on is a positive, like don't give up. Keep moving forward is the mantra. Just keep moving forward. Successful in ways of like the heart or the mind is as stupid as it sounds. Like, there's projects I'm working on that I'll maybe make $100 or $200 off of. But it's amazing, and I'm proud of it and all that. And then there are times where I'll lose out on a $25,000 job. And that's a bummer and crushing, because that could have sustained more of the smaller, fruitful, interesting project. So success is a weird word for me right now. I'm not having to punch a clock. I'm not... having to work in an oppressive environment. Like, I think about that a lot.
Golden handcuffs where you're kind of, you don't want to leave a really, really great situation because it's great pay or great insurance, or whatever. You don't have to face that kind of decision.
Right.
But instead, you're facing all the decisions that any owner, any founder has to face on the daily.
But also, like, my mom worked for the phone company. My dad was a truck driver. I'll be honest, like, during the pandemic, it was absolutely stunningly brutal. Like, the honest answer is in Q4, I made $0. And I'm sitting on websites looking at like Denso or UPS. Like I'm not above working those jobs, but where I am a dick is I would much rather work those jobs than a entry-level design position where I'm going to be demeaned or talked down to. Working with my hands or working... all of that is actually noble, good work. I don't mean to sound like I'm talking down or anything. It's like, no, I would much rather do that.
Right.
Well, I did some construction work. As long as the IRS is not listening, I did some free construction work.
You helped out some buddies.
I helped some buddies tear down some walls.
Yeah.
I was good at that. That was easy work. Yeah. Just don't hit my head in that house. That house had very small ceilings. So.
Well, if we can wrap all this stuff that you're doing up and call it this current phase of your career.
Right.
What's your favorite part of it? And then what would you like to cut out with a scalpel, right? What's the least favorite part of it?
My favorite part is honestly, it's not even doing the work or creating the piece. Like I would say at different points, I would have said, oh, it's when I turn over the work and they're happy about it. But I think even now it's meeting the new people. Like I have a meeting set up next Tuesday that I can't talk about, but it's one of those things where it's like, holy crap, I'm about to be in a position where I'm going to have to wear pants. And for your listeners who don't understand, that is a big deal if I have to put on pants. Like I am a shorts 365 sweating like crazy person, but it's like a BFD. And then at the same time, I just turned in a proposal to do social media and digital marketing for a company to where they told me what they think they would want. And I turned around and told them, I was like, no. You don't need this. You don't need this. You actually need to do more, and guided them a little bit more. And it's the same thing. It's like getting that gig and then meeting the other people. That's the part that's interesting to me, because I get to meet new people who are doing interesting things. The part that I can cut out with a scalpel, fiscal insecurity would be one. And if I could turn off the old phrases, comparison is the thief of joy. And that is true. Like seeing other people getting stuff that I would have wished I would have got. Stuff like that. But fiscal insecurity would be a huge portion. Like that's because we just came out of an abysmal year. That's, of course, weighing on my
Not mind. A lot of client meetings.
No. And not a lot of budgets being open.
Okay.
Like at the beginning of the year, I had 3 contracts with 3 different corporations. And all of them were like, we don't know what's going to happen. So you're done. It's like, oh, crap. Okay. And then in the middle of the year, I lost a longstanding contract just because they had no income. And they, luckily, fortunately, I was the last contractor. She was like, I let this go as long as I could, and I can't let it go any longer. So that was awesome. Like, that she actually cared about me enough to do that. But, you know, to have all those gone, and then there, I was bidding on one job that the guy was like, the creative director was like, they're not letting us spend a penny because they don't know what's going to happen. And that was for a healthier company. I was like, out of anybody, I thought they would be the safest one, but nope. So, yeah.
I mean, there's no guarantees in any kind of role, really, but certainly with a sole proprietorship, et cetera, there's a lot more risk. Whereas if you're in a 9-to-5, 40-hour, right. If you're in a permanent role, there's at least a little bit of friction on the part of the company getting rid of you, right? Because there's a lot of red tape they've got to go through and effort they have to go through. And usually you're one of many people they can consider laying off. You're not the guy. So there's a little bit less risk. But to your point, you might not be happy in that role, particularly if you're having to take creative direction from someone who's far less experienced or one-dimensional. And you're just biting your tongue the whole time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I think back to, I have friends, I'm terrible at sales, but I have friends that are in sales. And one of my friends, Brandy Reagan, I'll give her a shout out here, that she was like, take the meeting. That was always her thing. Take the meeting. Even if you don't think, you know, you'll get it or what, it doesn't matter. Take the meeting. Show up. Show up. Be professional. So there was one company in town that I knew the VP or one of the higher ups in marketing. And they were looking for a designer, like a position. I was like, well, I don't want to work for a company. I was like, I like doing it. I was like, take the meeting. It's like, you know what? I'm going to dress nice. I'm going to go in. I'm going to take the meeting with our director and try and sell him. Say, why do you want to pay someone to come in here and sit in a seat when you can pay me to do specialty projects like that?
And only when you really need it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. You're not having to pay insurance. You're not having to pay 401k. I'm paying any of that. So for anybody listen, it was the salary band was $30,000 to $35,000 for somebody with 3 to 5 years experience in design for a global company.
Wow.
And so I go in, that's it. First, our director did not start well. I showed up in a suit and tie because that's what you do. You show up in a suit and tie. And he looked at me and pointed me up and down and said, oh, is this what we're doing today? And I almost went, strike one. Strike one. Do you go up to a gorilla in the mountains and poke him in the chest? Don't do that. Like, that's when my Fulton gets up in me, my Fulton High School. And then we sat down and he was like, I got to tell you, you're overqualified for this position. I was like, thank you. And we're sitting there and talking. He's showing me everything they're doing. And there's one thing they did, which I will not say, but it was something I was like, why are you doing that? And he got done on his spiel on how amazing it was. And once he got done, it's like, did you ever think about this? And he was like, yeah, but we do it. I was like, or you could do this. And he was like, okay, on to that. I was like, oh, You just
touched a nerve.
Yeah. We keep talking. And then at one point, he was like, I think you really ought to consider this job. I was like, no. I was like, what is the salary band? And he was like, 30, 35. He was like, what would it take to get you to start talking to us? He's like, 30? I want to go, why are you even starting there? 35? 40? 50? I was like, 50, we'll start talking. I was like, I don't know why you need somebody to fill a seat. I was like, you could hire me. You know that I'm good at what I do. I'll do it quicker and more efficiently, and you can pay me half. You can pay me $15,000 a year just to really hone in and get stuff done. And he was like, no, I have to have someone here. And I almost said, you're a terrible manager. If you have to lord over somebody, you're a terrible manager.
I will say that that's one thing that the quarantine has really shed some light on.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good thing for creatives because now, and I say creatives is a very wide category.
Right.
Let's take my day job, user experience. I would have not thought 5 years ago that you could do a good job in a UX type role just because you need to be up close and personal, so to speak, with a lot of elements within the company, with product, with engineering, with sales.
Right.
And of course, you need to be up close and personal with your user base. Well, damned if it can't be done, actually.
Right.
And as we've seen that a lot of jobs that we wouldn't have considered qualifying can be done quite well remotely, if not better remotely.
Yeah.
And so companies and managers, leadership within those companies, I think they were under some constraints before the quarantine where it was just culture. It was the accepted thing. Now, I think we're in this period of decentralization across every sphere, and the workplace is one of those. So it's going to be really interesting to see what sort of virtuous or vicious cycles start spinning up where companies are getting more and more share of the high end of the talent pool because they're flexible.
Yeah.
Or they're getting more and more of the lower end of the talent pool because they're not.
Right. There's one company in town that they went fully remote. That's what that taught them. We don't need this big corporate office. And they had just built a big corporate office like 5-6 years ago. And the person that I know there, I was talking to him about it. He's like, yeah, my wife and I are moving back to Chattanooga. So that's where they were from. He was like, we don't need to be here anymore. Like, we were here because of work.
Right.
Now we don't need to be here. We're moving back to Chattanooga. He's like, I'll have to either get a remote office down there to just so I'm not in my house, or, you know, to take a meeting or something. Or he's like, or I'll have to drive up here once every 2 months. He's like, it's an hour and a half drive from Chattanooga. He was like, it will be a welcome day in Knoxville.
Fire a couple podcasts and yeah, you're up here. Right? Yeah. So thanks for sharing all that, Jody. I hadn't realized that there were so many, elements to running your own design business in this modern age with all the additional social and digital, impact.
Yeah. And I will say one thing that I've not done that Brandy would, I'm going to bring her up again. She would murder me for. I've not done one bit of outbound marketing. Any work I've gotten has been referrals or people connections I've already made.
I think you're a master at networking in Knoxville. Anytime I've mentioned you, for example, my wife is not connected to the design community in Knoxville, right? But she knew of you, right?
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, he has that feral giant thing.
Yeah.
Like, how does everyone know about Jody? Right? I mean, so obviously you're doing something right, whether it's just having authentic conversations at the right time with the right people.
And I think it's also the flip side of like knowing marketing, trying to do outbound marketing. Also, trying to do outbound marketing or design for yourself, which you know this, is the worst.
It is.
It's the worst.
Your skill level goes down dramatically when you're designing for yourself, I think.
And I keep thinking about outbound marketing. It's like, who's your favorite kind of client? I was like, my joke has always been one that pays on time. If I tried to do outbound marketing for me, I'm sure other people, same thing of like what we were saying about all this crazy stuff I do. It would not make sense to Julie. It would not make sense to Julie. Because I'm sure it would be some kind of crazy, weird, around-the-way thing or something, or shotgun blast kind of stuff.
It wouldn't be targeted. It wouldn't be on message. It wouldn't be specific, anything like that. Yeah.
It would be me. Yeah. That would as stupid and arrogant as that sound, it would be me. That's it. There is no easy path.
So we got an idea of kind of what you're doing now. I want to take a step back and figure out what led you here.
Okay.
So what would you say the most influential stepping stones have been in your life that kind of put you on this path, whether that's, you know, family and friends influence, if it's the Fulton High School, a gulag, that first job over the summer, or eureka moments, what got you here?
I would like to, it's kind of funny that I can pinpoint, like I can name three people who had the greatest impact on my life. I can name four. Like, it's super simple for me. So what I end up going back and talking at schools a lot, especially Fulton. So when I went to Fulton, it's very rough. I went there from 1992 to 1996. I saw a gun on my first day of school. I went across the street to the Fellini Kroger, and there was a fight in the parking lot. There was a fight in the parking lot every day for the first 2 weeks. I've seen, you know, drugs, guns. In our graduating class of somewhere between 103 and 108, 75% of those are dead, in prison, or have done jail time. That's how rough Fulton was.
Which of those do you fall into?
No comment. Again, IRS. Like, do not come at me. Please. I'm a lowly graphic designer here in Knoxville. But yeah, we had our 20th high school reunion, and I'd always said it was about a two-thirds. And then I was like, oh no, we're up to three-quarters now.
Wow.
So the people that really made it, the people who made it got really lucky. But going back to that, it was a hardcore vocational school to where you took pre-voc your freshman year and you took wood shop, upholstery, auto mechanics, electrical, drafting, TV production, radio production. Radio still had the 8-track things that we would put in for ads and stuff. And even all the music was on 8-tracks.
You literally had bumpers, you know?
Yeah, literally. But one of the, there were only two computers in the entire school. It's 1992. And they were the old Mac 2CE Classic. And one of them was in print shop, graphic arts, and one of them was in draft. And I was like, this is the dumb thing to say. I feel like computers are the future, guys. I'm going to get into computers. So I took graphic arts. And Mr. Miracle, Conley Miracle, he was in the military. He ran the print shop in, shoot, now I can't think of what it's called, in Colorado, the one that is NORAD. He ran the print shop at NORAD.
Wow.
Like, he would talk about, he was like, I would have to walk 1 mile to go 5 miles underground, and my print shop was back in the back. He was like, there's stuff I printed that I still can't talk to you about.
The safest print job ever.
Yeah. And, but he, I took that class. I was like, hey, I can work on a computer here. So I was like, I want to get into this. I had taken art in middle school, but I've never been good at hand illustration. Still not good at hand illustration because it's comparison to Thief of Joy. I've got so many friends that are so much better. Where I'm like, I suck. I can't do crap. But Mr. Miracle went in there and you had to take an OSHA test to even get to go back in the shop. So like I had to learn all about safety regulations, all that stuff. But then same thing about the getting bored thing. So I did the computer like my first year, my freshman year. And then sophomore year, I was like, I'm going to learn how to do pre-press to where I would make film, strip it up, burn a plate, and deliver it to the press guys. Junior year, I started learning post-press, like cutting and bindering and all that. And some printing. Senior year, started learning how to run the presses. And I actually taught Prevoke my last semester. So having Mr. Miracle, and I had an art teacher there, Miss Waller, that she was really impactful too. Like, that she would teach us about like Piet Mondrian and abstract. But we would do screen printing. We would do linoleum cuts. Like, we did all this crazy stuff at Fulton. She had been an art professor at UT, her and her husband, for a long time. And but yeah, Mr. Miracle, that impact was kind of insane. Like, had that not come along, I think I was on the path to be an elementary school teacher, which would have been hilarious because the giant elementary school teacher. And also, as much as I cuss, that probably would have not ended well.
Would have been a short career.
Yeah, a very short career.
And then you mentioned the pre-press. You've had several, you know, professional roles where that pre-press mm-hmm. experience was essential.
Right. Like, so the one of the other very impactful people, Dennis Huff, I was working at Taco Bell when I was in college, put myself through school. And I hit a point where I was like, I've got to get an internship. And I had this is a very Knoxville thing to say. My uncle's ex-wife worked at a company that did label print. And so I contacted her. I was like, I need an internship. And I went to Pellissippi and agencies weren't, it was all about UT. It wasn't about Pellissippi back then. So I contacted her and she's like, yeah, call Dennis. He runs the shop over at Imaging Solutions. So I called him, left a voicemail, nothing. Like 3 days later, called him again. Nothing. 3 days later, called him. Like, I kept hounding him for 2 weeks. And he's told me since, he's like, if you had not kept hounding me, you would never work. He's like, after 2 weeks, he finally called me. He's like, all right, kid, come on in. Let's do an interview. So I did. I had a portfolio. He was amazed that I had a portfolio. And I went in and I started working first as a designer. And then they had this big machine called a DocuTech where we printed Kenmore Roper manuals. And he was like, man, we need some help out there. Can you do? I was like, yeah. And they had this machine that you would feed these books through and it would, fold them, stitch them, and cut them. And because of how I grew up, I was like, oh, I know how to fix that machine. Like, anytime it'd screw up, it's like, oh yeah, well, if we just take out this part, because my grandfather knew how to fix everything. So he taught me small engine repair, all that. But then couple that with the print shop, it's like, oh yeah, I know how to fix this. Because we had no budget in high school. We had to fix it all ourselves. And so I got to do that for a year. But then later on, I worked at a print shop where I was the creative director and pre-press manager. And that was hilarious because I walked to the back one day and the guy in charge of bindery, he was like, you're the only designer we've ever had that actually walked back here and asked us questions. I was like, yeah, why would I not? And I was like, because I don't want to design something that's going to be a nightmare for y'all to produce. And he was like, never. Whatever they came up with, we would just have to do.
I got to stop you for a second because yeah. I think that's a kind of a common theme that I've been culpable in my own life. But back when I was sort of a beginning designer, I'll say a beginning web designer because I've already been a designer for a while, but getting into web design, I was guilty because I would be designing these website designs for like automotive websites, for example.
Yeah.
And the designs were great. I mean, they were fabulous for that day, right? You know, forward thinking, modern, blah, blah, blah. They couldn't be coded.
Oh my God.
Because we were dealing with IE5 and Netscape 4 and whatnot. So there was, it didn't have the hooks, the handles to do a lot of what I was designing. So they would go to build them out and they would come to me scratching their heads. What is your intent here? How do these things react when you resize the browser and whatnot? So this is like early responsive design thinking on the part of the developer.
Yeah.
So that made me realize, okay, I need to go down to the back of the warehouse and talk to the print shop, right?
Yep.
I actually need to learn enough code to where I understand what is feasible and what is not, so that when I'm issuing a design, it's within the realm of possibility.
Yep. And that's what I talked about, like learning all those different things like photo or video. I always feel like, especially like photo and video and web design, the best part about learning those things, you also learn your limits and learn when you need to get somebody better at. Like, I can't tell you how many times it's been like, I can do these photos, doing something for a nonprofit, just covering an event. I was like, oh, wait, we're needing to do this for a national. No. I'm going to bring in this person who has better lighting, better cameras, and can just knock it out a lot better.
And better muscle memory.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. 100%. But yeah, and that kind of goes back to one of the other people very impactful, David Gilbert, who ran the program at Pellissippi and essentially started that program. That he was telling me he worked at a print shop in the 80s. It was the same thing. He designed. All this came from him, kind of. It made the light go off in my head. It's like, of course, you worked in printing. You should know this. Where he was sitting there telling me that he told me he liked me because I actually understood printing. And nobody else in that program did. And he said, I was working for this print shop and I designed something. And then all of a sudden the bindery person came in and said, all right, let me show you how you just screwed us. And showed him, like, doing all these crazy folds and stuff. And he was like, this is going to be a nightmare for us. This should cost twice as much as it does because you designed it this way. And he was like, never again. Anytime I want to do anything cool, I would go back there and talk to them. And my thought was always, and they also have great ideas on making stuff cool. Like, there were times where I'd go and talk to the pressman. I'd be like, what if I did this with this color and overlay these two colors? What do you think that would do? And they were like, oh, that'd be cool, but think about also doing this. It's like, holy crap, yeah, of course.
So you're expressing the intent
right.
of your design, really, and then they're providing additional avenues to get
right.
there.
Right, right. Well, yeah, the best person in town right now is Andy Coleman at Coleman Printing. Because he has forgotten more about printing than I know. And I know a lot. And he and I went there. Do you know Haseeb Qureshi?
Yeah.
Okay, so Haseeb and I went there and did a tour. And Haseeb's a very much a app developer, coder kind of guy. And we're
techie entrepreneur.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And so we're talking and we're walking around with Andy. And Andy knew me a little bit, but we didn't really know one another. And we get to a certain point and Andy was like, is all this making sense to y'all? And I looked at Haseeb and I was like, again, I'm a dick. I looked at Haseeb and I was like, I'm going to prove to Andy that I know what he's talking about. I looked at Andy and he was like, I know the difference between a work and turn and a work and tumble. And the guy that was beside him said, what? Wait, who are you? Like, he just stopped. He was like, wait, how do you know that? And I was like, and Haseeb said, all of that sounded like gibberish to me. I was like, I know. And Andy was like, okay. I'll start talking directly to you. It's like, cool. And ever since then, he still laughs about that. So the difference for those at home, work and tumble and work and turn, is when you're working on a press, you're feeding the paper in. When you go back to print the backside, if you're just flipping the paper over, that the gripper edge is still the same, that's the work and turn, because you're just turning it. Work and tumble is when you flip it to, and I know this is an audio podcast, but you change the gripper side. Once you change the gripper side, that makes it, how it pulls it through the press, that's a work and tumble. Because it's a little bit harder to register.
And takes more time, right?
And it takes more time.
Yep. So it's more expensive.
Yep.
Okay.
Or, yeah, it's just more of a pain in the butt. And it's all about the grain of the paper and all that. It's crazy. Like, that was something I learned working at the print shop that I did not learn when I was in high school, is that paper has grain and it feeds through the press a certain way to get the ink to lay down correct. I was like, oh, good, sweet Lord. Okay. No idea. Okay. So that would change where there were some things I would design like a poster. I'd be like, what's the biggest we can do on this? And like, he was like, oh, we can fit 6 up on a sheet going this way because that's how the grain goes. Cool, that's what we're going to do. And I would do a poster that was something like 11 by 32 just to make it interesting and weird. But yeah, they're like, oh yeah, that worked. I was like, yeah.
So
because I came and asked you.
That's an example of constraints, right? Constraints mm-hmm. in design are always a thing. They seem like a limiting factor when you're a young designer, but ultimately you want constraints because it allows you to be creative.
You want bumpers.
You want bumpers, yeah. And so you actively went out and did the research, did the intelligence right. gathering to understand what the constraints were, and then optimize your design for those constraints.
Yeah. And also, I also learned there, like, screwing up is okay. I did an annual report for Friends of the Smoky, and I did this big thing, same thing. It was like, it's going on in a 9x12 envelope. What's the max size we can make the report be to where it's not hard to fit in the envelope, but it's bigger than just a normal size? And it was like 8.5 by 11.5 or something. Still had to come in a bit. So I did it, set off. This is before we printed our own, when we did our own film, but I had to send it out to a film company, and I put bleeds on every single side, and it came back with bleeds on every single side, even in the gutter. And I looked at, and it was a lot of film. It's a 36, 48 page, is a very expensive screw up. And I looked at it, and I was like,
so for listeners, if both sides of an opposing pages have a bleed, a full bleed, then in the middle, in the crack of the book or the crack of the pamphlet, mm-hmm. you're going to have an overlap of ink. Is that?
You're going to have an extra quarter of an inch. So there was an extra quarter of an inch in the middle of stuff that didn't need to be there. And okay. it couldn't be in there because it would have been too big for the... And I'm looking at it going, oh God, I screwed up. And the owner of the company, the pressman, he was not happy because it was going to cost him a lot of money. But luckily, like the people at the film company, Color Central, they were like, oh no, that's fine. We'll just charge you costs for another round of film, which is still not going to be cheap, but it's not going to be that bad. But it's still bad, but not detrimental. But I was talking to our pre-press person at the time. At that point, well, we always had a pre-press person. I just wasn't in charge of them at that point. That came late. For Virginia, she was like, here's the thing. Will you ever make that mistake again? I was like, no. She's like, there you go. She's like, this will pay off so much in the long run that you don't even know. She's like, you just made a mistake that's going to cost us $625. And it will save tens of thousands of dollars from you later
on. And that's a great example of on-the-job education.
Right.
Where you're actually learning super valuable things. And you're not getting it from a four-year degree.
Right.
Or a graduate degree, God forbid, right? You're getting all these functional skills. And that's adding to your repertoire of tricks that you can pull.
Yeah. And it's also something that, because I talk to kids so much now, and I actually taught graphic design to kids, same thing. It's like, now I'm going to instill in them, don't forget about this because I made that mistake, so you don't have to make it. Yeah.
At this point, we took a short break, and by the time I was recording again, Jody had launched into a full-on story about how he had met Aaron Drapa.
I went over to my hotel, and I came back, and I was coming back to the lobby, and there was a dude sitting on his luggage in the lobby. And I looked at him, I was like, that's fucking Chip Kidd. And I said, you're Chip Kidd. And he was like, he stood up, I am. I was like, been big fan for a long time, dude. Big influence, man. I studied you a lot when I was in school. I was like, you and Charles S. Anderson changed the game. And he was like, thank you. Thank you so much. And we talked for a minute. I was like, all right, I got to go back up there. He's like, okay. He was like, are you coming to see my talk tomorrow? I was like, of course I am. I'll be there. So later on that day, Draplin spoke in this tiny room. And Chip Kidd came in, saw me, came over and sat next to me. I was like, holy shit. I'm seeing Draplin with Chip Kidd sitting right next to me. And then Chip and I started talking after it. I was like, dude, I got to get a photo. My friend Michelle, you came and spoke at her Borders in New Jersey a couple times. And she loves you. He's like, okay. And he's a very out gay man. And he hung himself on me. I got to find that photo. And I was like, this is going to make Michelle so jealous. And he was like, oh, it's going to make my boyfriend jealous too. I was like, yes. And then I woke up. I was like, Draplin saw a Chip Kidd. And he got excited. I was like, hey, Draplin, got somebody for you to meet over here. And he was like, shut up. What the fuck? Like, he was freaking out.
But so. The price of the admission there was just you being nice.
Yeah.
Like, well, hey, observant. Like, yeah. You're actually seeing and noticing these things. And then just being civil.
Well, there's only two people I would lose my shit around. Like, I met Charles Barkley a couple years ago. I was just like, hey, man. Like that. In a cigar bar. And he was like, I walked in the door. And he turned around and looked at me. He's like, how are we doing today, big guy? And I was like, doing good. How are you doing today? Hey, man. Like that. And he's like, great. And they were talking to him about cigars. And it was tiny. And I was like, if you're looking for a good one, I've already smoked this one over here. He's like, oh, which one is that? And he came over and I picked it out for him. And at that point, the guy said, hold on. And he reached back and got an even better one of that brand.
Right.
Like, oh, God. So he didn't give that to me, but I look like a football player. I could be in here, you know. And he was super nice. And when he went out, he said bye and patted me on the shoulder. Charles Barkley.
Sure.
Like, that was fine. But Magic Johnson or Kevin Smith, if I ever get to meet him, I'm just going to walk up and say, I'm going to hug you and I'm going to cry. And that's what's going to happen. And I'm sorry, but that's what has to happen. And I feel like Magic Johnson would be like, bring it in. Kevin Smith may be like, security.
Right.
But yeah, for the most part, it's like everybody's just people. I've met a lot of musicians and big time comedians. I'm like, they're just fucking people, man.
A lot of times I have trouble getting past the weirdness of that personality meet. Mm-hmm. It's like, the only reason I'm trying to meet you is because you're famous,
yeah. Right?
And that in itself is a weird dynamic.
Yeah.
So I'd prefer to have something other than your notoriety as a common ground between us, right? And at that point, I feel like we you're approachable. We can actually have a conversation.
Yeah. And you can kind of tell some people who don't want to interact.
Right.
And some people that are very... I went and saw Dana Gould and Bobcat Goldthwait in Asheville. And afterwards, they did a meet and greet, and I stood back there. Bobcat did not want to talk to anybody. But Dana was all about it. And so I went up to him and he was like, hey, how's it going? And we started talking for a minute. And I was like, man, do you know Dana Gould?
I don't know Dana Gould, no.
He's a comedian, but he wrote on The Simpsons for like 12 years. And he's been in a bunch of stuff. He's an actor in a bunch of stuff. And he was on this show with Fred Savage in the 90s called Working, which was a terrible show. But I was like, man, I almost brought season one of Working on Laserdisc for you to sign. And he was signing like a poster. And he's like, they put that on Laserdisc? It's like, no, it's a joke. And he was like, holy shit, you got me. He was like, I thought you were being serious. And why the hell would they ever, like, he just started going nuts. I was like, I was just trying to find something that I could just joke. And he was like, I still talk to a lot of, and then he just went down memory lane of like, I still talk to a lot of those. They're all super nice people. And I was like, cool. That's the point where I didn't know where to go. I was like, I was just making a joke. And Bobcat was like, barely shake hand. And he was like, hi.
Yeah. Didn't want to be there. We've heard a couple goals now.
Okay.
The two individuals you want to meet and cry on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a minute about your I guess, more specific, more traditional values and goals.
Yeah.
Could you sum up the values that you live by, that you hold most dear, and that can be as general or specific as you're comfortable?
As stupid as this sounds, I don't want to screw anybody over. I think sometimes why I struggle with the comparison is the thief of joy is because I've been in this for so long that I see losing jobs to certain people. I was like, they put a zero on the end of their bid on that job, and they're not going to deliver that amount. I was like, that bugs me. That bums me out. And I get fussed at by friends for underbidding or my hourly rate being too small. I'm like, no, I want to be fair and equitable for everybody. And I don't want to screw anybody over. I want to do a good job for people. I'm very, the good and bad side of the Collins gene is I am very stubborn. Like, we joke about quitting things. Like, I have not been to a Target in like 10 years because I had a bad experience. I'm like, I'm done. Have not, will not spend another penny in a Target. All because of one bad experience. So that's part of the Collins gene. But the other part of the Collins gene is I want to be honest and right by people and not screw anybody over. If anybody has a bad thing to say about me, I probably earned it, or I don't know, or they're nuts. I don't know a polite way to say that. Like, or it's their own mishigas. I'm going to use some Yiddish. Their own craziness. Shoot, that was the values. What was the second part you said? Sorry.
Well, so the value in this case was, you know, don't screw people over. And that's sort of almost a behavioral measure where you've got a bunch of values that fall under that umbrella.
Right.
But the concise way and the practical way of abiding by it is just don't screw people over.
Don't screw over. Do right by everybody. There was a long time where it was don't make somebody else do work that you would not be willing to do. I may be saying that wrong. Like, whenever I was in charge of people, I was like, I'd be willing to do all this work. I don't have the time. So I am entrusting you in doing this work.
But it's not a task you wouldn't do.
Right.
It's just you can't because you have to delegate.
Right. Okay. Right.
So the other part of that question was around goals. So since you've kind of explained what your value is.
Yeah.
What specific goals have you made along those lines? What goals do you have that kind of factor into that do right by other people?
I think the goal is than to make them happy and make them come back. Because all everything for me, my goals are just to not, as simple as it sounds, I don't care about doing work for Nike. I'm actually, here's a little spoiler alert. I've had on my short list for a while to do a series of pieces for my dream club. Because one of my friends texted me and she was like, how Oreo has not hired you to do work? I don't know. Because I post about Oreos so much. I'm obsessed with Oreos. And I was like, oh, I should do a piece and tag them in it. And she was like, you better do that. Like, she was fussing at me. Like, you have to do that. And so I started making a short list. I was like, who would be my dream clients? And it was like Oreo, Waffle House. It's not Nike. It's not craft beer. Burial Beer in Asheville, North Carolina is maybe my favorite brewery in the world outside of Knoxville. I'm going to just cover my butt and say outside of Knoxville. All the ones in Knoxville are, of course, supreme and superior.
Love them all.
They're all better than Burial. Unless Burial's listen to this, and then I'll sell out everybody and not. No. But like Burial, like I would love to do something for Burial. But I'm also, in knowing people who've done stuff for the big companies, know that a lot of times that comes with a price tag. And you don't get to do what you're good at doing.
It's almost always a trade-off.
Right. Yeah, Jessica Hish talked about, she gets hit up to do artwork for like the New York Times or the New Yorker. And she was like, it's always like a 3-day turnaround. And you have to do like 5 different design art pieces for them to approve or disapprove. Then they'll just nitpick that thing to death. And then at the end of that, you get paid like $150. She was like, but it's in the New York Times. And that's awesome.
And they know it, and they know they can get away with it because there's so many people lined up at the door to get that recognition of having done a piece for the New Yorker.
Right. But like goals, it's to get people to come back. It's what I was going to say about it all being so simple is the fiscal insecurity thing weighs so heavy on. So I think if you treat people right and you do right by them and you don't screw them over, they're more likely to recommend. I guess I'm living proof to that I haven't done any outbound marketing, but I just keep getting recommended to other people.
Right.
And so I always joke, this is possibly the dumbest goal in the world. I would love to be able to take a vacation and not have to worry about how much money is in my bank account while I'm on vacation. If I want to go get a nicer meal, I can do it without being like, I can only spend $100. And I'm not talking about spending $10,000. I'm talking about the difference in spending $10 for lunch and $30 for lunch.
Right.
Like that's
still relatively modest.
Yes. Yeah. That would make me happy. If I'm in, Charleston, South Carolina, I love cigars. There's a hand-rolled shop in the middle of the city that is no signs, no nothing. You just have to know it's there. Or look on the internet. Spoiler alert. Look on the internet. And I will be able to go in there and buy 5 cigars and not have to stress about, well, I can only afford one.
Right.
Like, shit like that. And honestly, this is going to sound very braggy. I love giving gifts to people because I pay attention to where, like, my dad, for Father's Day, I gave him 2 things. I found at a antique shop these playing cards that were Martin playing cards with an atomic symbol on them, with an airplane. I was like, so this is either Martin Marietta before it was Martin Marietta, or even now it's Lockheed Martin before it was, this is cool. He will like this. And then I found that. And then I also, a while back, I have a lot of baseball caps. I bought this container, just this vinyl zip bag that you throw all your baseball caps in, slide it under your bed. And you can only buy 2. So I've held on to that second one for my dad for like a year. And I gave him those 2 things. He's like, oh, shit, yeah. And I was like, yeah. It's like, I didn't buy him a $500 Rolex. $10,000 Rolex. He doesn't give a shit about that. But those little Martin cards, he's like, that's cool. Look at that. Or like last year, I went to a Lost and Found record store and just dug for a while. And I found like an old Staples Singers album. I found Dickie Bettis from the Allman Brothers, his first solo album, which was, I think, pre-Allman Brothers. Anyway, it's called Richard Bettis. And I found that. And they were both like $3. And he was like, Richard Bettis? Why is this? I was like, think about it. And he flipped it over. He's like, that's Dickie Bettis. I was like, it is. He's like, holy shit. Like, And he posted about it on Facebook. He was like, look at these. I love giving gifts. One of my buddies had a cigar cutter that had a divot in it to where he could lay his cigar in it as he smoked. Anytime he needed to take a break, it just laid on top of it. He lost it getting on a plane. They took it from him. They're like, this is a weapon. Fucking cigar cutter. And so they took it, and he was pissed because they don't make that cigar cutter anymore. I have searched, but I found a butane lighter that on the side had a divot in it, and I bought that for him, and it was $12 and gave it.
But
it
like, filled that void. I was like,
here you go. And he's same thing. He still talks about that to this day. He's like, I can't believe. I was like, yeah, because I paid attention for 5 seconds. So that's another thing. It's like not having fiscal insecurity, I can do stuff like that. I've got one present that I can't talk about because I want to be there and hand it to, there's a couple I'm friends with that I found something online that costs like $100. I'm going to get it. I'm going to do it. But I have to be there when I give it to them because they're going to fall on the floor crying when I give it to them. And I'm just going to be giggling like a 12-year-old, like, yeah, I got you. Like giving of gifts is so, like getting stuff is cool, but giving shit is so much fun. It's so much fun. Because I see, like, you've got a ton of books here. One of my buddies, we try to top one another for Christmas every year. He got me a first edition of Deliverance, the book. And I was like, what the fuck? Where did you? He was like, wasn't cheap. I had to work to get it.
Right.
And I was like, that's how? And I find him, because he's not really into art or prints or stuff like that, I find him, like, crazy art prints for, like, films he loves and stuff.
Right.
On eBay. I found him, and he loves the Braves, and I found this crazy, like, metallic ink Braves print that he was like, I don't even know where you would go. I was like, I don't know. I just found it, and it's you, and there you go.
So the goal here is to be able to really practice your desired behavior of gifting without right. having that
right.
financial anxiety
right.
along with it. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Which sounds like I'm patting myself on the back, but it's not. The joy you get out of gift giving or the joy you get out of traveling pays off immensely. Like I drive a 2008 Toyota Yaris because it gets 45 miles to the gallon, and it's kind of funny that I get out of it. I don't care about a car. If I'm going to get a fancy car, I'm going to get a 68 Lincoln Continental and build it up myself. I was like, I'm not going to get a Bugatti Veyron although Ferraris are very nice. But I can't fit in a Ferrari, so it doesn't matter. Like, I don't want that stuff. I don't care about that stuff. Which all sounds very pat on the back to me.
Nah, I wouldn't say so. I think it just goes along with your character. Capital C character.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about how you get all this stuff done, right? So, granted, you don't have a wife or kids that are consuming yeah. your time, so that's a little bit of time back, but you also have all the demands of running the business and doing all this,
right.
I'll just say community involvement type stuff. So do you have any tips or tricks, either rituals or habits, that help you get this stuff done?
Everyone else also has 24 hours in a day. So if you can't get something done, don't stress about it. A lot of the things I look at as qubits of time. Like, this is going to take me 45 minutes to do. Okay, I can plan that 45 minutes today and get it done. Get it out. And that's what kind of bugs me sometimes with friends when they're like, oh, I don't have time this week. I was like, you do. You just, there's a lot of time where you're not doing anything or you're doom scrolling online.
Right.
It's like, if you really want to get it done, there is time. There is 24 hours.
I don't have time is kind of a proxy for I don't care enough to make time.
Right, right. That's... So I think it's with me, I'm going to die. And I don't, everybody says, I want to die with no regrets. Well, that's bullshit. I think if you die with no regrets, then you didn't really try. Like, I think you have to go out and fail and try and fail and try and fail and build up some regrets. Because some of those regrets are going to make you not do something ever again, or it's going to make you do something ever again. All the time. So for me, it's always like, I'm going to die one day. I want to do this art because I want to put it out in the world. I jokingly have a box full of ideas at home that if I had untold resources and time, it would take me 5 years to get through this box. And one of them is a domain called Fuck Good Enough. And it came from, I was working at the newspaper and the marketing person told me, it doesn't have to be good, it just needs to be good enough. And I turned around, looked at her and said, fuck good enough. It needs to be good because I want to put more good art and design out into the world. I hate the doing it shitty just to get it done. Like, I know done is better. What is it? What's that phrase?
Perfect is the enemy of is it good? Done. Perfect
is the enemy of done. And I get that. But I also think sometimes you can put something out there that at least has legs and can get better. But I see too much crappy stuff. Honestly, even though money has been tight, I switched one thing in my game this year to be pay what you want to some of the clients. Because I'm doing branding for a hardware company in the middle of Union County. That it's a person I went to high school with. It's I don't know how she's connected to these people. But she was like, hey, they need a new logo. Can you do it? It's like, yeah. And the person was like, wait, how much are you going to charge us? It's like, pay what you want. Give me creative freedom and pay what you want. And one of my friends fussed at me. He's like, only do that when you have secured money. I was like, no. I want to do this because I would rather do something good than them just have their name up in papyrus. I'm trying to pick the worst font ever. Papyrus. Or my world, copper plate gothic. Up on their sign. I want to have something good because I think that would be cool. Because if some draplin is going junking in the middle of Union County and all of a sudden he passes by this hardware store, he's like, where'd this come from?
Right. How'd they get this logo?
Like, have you seen what all, no offense, Union County, but have you seen what all is around here?
There's got to be a story there. Yeah.
Why? Yeah. So, I don't know. That was a lot of... Goals.
Well, there wasn't really anything super specific there. It was more just, it seemed to indicate that you like to be aware of your finite time on the earth and right. Try to maybe use that as a filter for activities.
Right. And I've turned down a lot of work. I've turned down podcast guests. Going back to podcasts. I recently had somebody I've had on before. And same thing about making time. They don't really have a job. They're a musician in Brooklyn. No offense to this person. They're not going to listen to this, so it's okay. But this person, I was like, hey, I want to do an interview. I was doing a series of interviews with musicians on what it was like for musicians during the pandemic. And I was like, hey, I would like to interview you. And they were like, can't this month, but how about next month? I was like, sure. So I reached out the next month. Hey, so I can only give you 15 minutes. I was like, we're good. We're good. I'm not going to do because that's not worth my, I don't want to do that. This is a joy for me. I don't want you shitting on my joy because you would rather not spend an hour. Even an hour would
right.
be good.
Yeah.
15 minutes is so such a...
You barely say hi.
Yeah. Such a slap in the face to where it is like, don't be afraid to turn stuff down just because it doesn't feel right to you. Yeah, I don't know that I have anything specific. I don't know. Keep moving forward. That's my goal.
And it's something that the last couple of guests I've mentioned is a strong commitment to saying no. So you kind of just alluded to that a little bit and turning someone down. I imagine saying no to some opportunities is also part of that.
Yeah, there's like you had mentioned morals at one point, and there was a PR company that their biggest client was a gun store. And I was like, no. And I know that would be decent money, but no. It's like I have too many bad experiences with guns. I don't like perpetuating them. If you like guns, bully for you. But they're not my thing, so I'm not going to promote. I'm not going to take what I've worked really hard at getting good at to do that. That's
a few years ago, I pinged an old respected source for some investment ideas. Like, you know, you guys have done well. What have you done, et cetera? And one of the things they came back with is, well, we've invested in cigarette companies all these years. It's like, hard stop. You know, even if that's great money, you're going to get, you know, return on investment, blah, blah, blah. I can never do that, investing in something that's obviously a killer.
The one thing I will say to that, though, is... There was a guy I met like 5 or 6 years ago who worked for, I think, RJ Reynolds. And he was very drunk, sitting on a friend's porch. And we were talking. And I was like, does this weed being legal scare you? He's like, no. We've been ready for it for years. The minute it becomes legal, we're going to be the biggest mass producer of weed in the country. And I was like, holy, that seems very, I don't want to say liberal, but open-minded of you. He's like, money. All about money.
Sure. It's the bottom line.
And there's part of me, it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. And there's another part of me, it's like, no, it should be boutique weed. All the cool stuff. Not RJ Reynolds. Screw that. But I also look at them, it's probably not to, but it's probably smart on their end. Like, cigarettes are essentially going to go away at a certain point. We got to figure out something else. So that's smart on their end. So it's one of those, it's like, I don't know that that's a good investment. Because also cigarettes are getting so expensive now. It's got to be dying out. It's got to be dying.
And unless you renew your customer base,
yeah,
your customers are dying out.
Seriously. Yeah, because kids are choosing weed over, of course, in states that it's legal. Or
vape.
Yeah.
Vape devices and things like that, right?
I think the big thing at that point is vape wasn't as big a thing.
Okay. Generally, I like to ask a question around hobbies, but I think we've actually covered quite a bit of that at this point. and we're nearly out of time, so I want to zoom out a little bit and ask two questions before I turn it over to you. Since hindsight is 2020, if you could go back, what major decision would you change and why? And maybe that's a role that you would or wouldn't have taken, or leaving, or going back to school, starting a business, or pulling the plug on one. What would you change? I know you said that mistakes inform you and train you, et cetera, but is there anything that stands out that you're willing to talk about?
Yeah. I think a lot of the regrets or things would not be business related.
Okay.
My grandfather had a great impact on me, but he was old school, tough dude, born in the teens, went through the Depression, was a rough guy before he went and served in World War II, and he served in the worst shit possible in the Pacific conflict. Came back a changed man, but he was still that guy that never talked, always looked mean, always looked like he had a scowl on his face. Loved kids, you never know. Scared the shit out of me growing up. 6'2" man born in the teens. He was the me of that time. Like, that was massive for back then. And he gave me the greatest, and this will go back to what I said about only having so much time. Him and my uncle. I was working at Taco Bell. I couldn't figure out how to make it. Was not working out. I had an opportunity to go to Walmart and work, but they wanted a more rigid schedule, and I was not going. I was essentially going to have to drive from Pellissippi to the East Knoxville Walmart in the amount of time it takes to do that, and somehow figure out how to change clothes and eat on my way. I'm sitting there talking to him about this. Don't know why. Never talked to him about shit like this. Ever. He listens to me and he gets it, and he's like, are you happy? It's like, no. And he's like, quit. You'll figure it out. Life's too short to be unhappy. Got up and walked away. Died within a month after that. So a regret is not being able to spend more time with him. Same thing with my uncle. My dad's younger brother, he died at, I think, like 52. And same thing, like, our family is really tight. Those uncles are almost like dads to me. That uncle, I was working on a local music website at that point, and we had driven up to Kentucky for a family reunion, and I was riding with him and my cousin. And my uncle was driving, and we were talking, and he was like, that website you've done, he was like, I go on there at least 3 times a week. I'm really proud of you for that. You did a really good job with that. I was like, oh, thank you. And we talked about that for a while, and we got back, and he passed away a week later. Less than a week later. That was a Sunday. He passed away on that Saturday. So the same thing, spending more time with him. Those are real regrets. Jobs and shit, who cares? I consider, you said lucky very early on this. I am very lucky with the people I've met, both good and bad. I've had horrible bosses. I've had tremendous bosses. I've got one boss that, when I worked at PetSafe, Jill Weinstein, tiny Jewish lady that I call boss, like a boss on the SNL. Like, literally when she calls me, it plays boss. And every time I refer to her, and we have this great relationship, where people would walk by and they're like, are you angry at one another? And I was like, no, this is just how we talk. Like, we would cuss one another out, but she cares about me and I care about her. Like, even though my time was cut short there, I'm very fortunate to have her. So a lot of those things I don't look at as regrets, because it's like the bad bosses, I look at them as like, that's a way to never act. Right. Don't ever do that.
You learn just as much from them.
Yeah. But the actual regrets are more around personal stuff. Or, you know, family. Because I look at when I got let go at the... So my last job in an office was working for EW Scripts, which got turned into Journal Media Group, which got bought out by Gannett. And I was making the most money I'd ever made in my life. And once Gannett USA Today bought us out, my boss's boss got scared that everybody was going to leave. She got us all these severance package contracts that were like, if you get laid off before this point, we will give you... It was like a third of your salary. So we got laid off. Like, the minute it passed the SEC, I'm not kidding, it passed the SEC at night on a Friday. On Monday morning at 10 a.m., we got pulled into a room. Even though we'd been told, oh no, we're going to welcome you into the family. We were like,
yeah. I remember that day. I mean, Knoxville shook.
Yeah. And it was like, here's the funniest pat on the back thing. There were only 4 of us on that team of designers that did branding and marketing work for 14 papers across the country. And they said, you have 3 months. And a month in, they came back and they're like, we're giving you an extra month because we can't figure out how 4 people do this much work. And I was like, and I just looked at the person almost like with the cup of coffee going, no shit. Like, maybe don't fire us. But I didn't care because I had a third of my salary coming to me, so I didn't care.
Right.
So then I get laid off. I get that third of the salary all as one lump sum, and that sustained me. I started, there was a PR company that he sold me a bill of goods. He was going to give me all this work, then he just ghosted me. And he's an awful human being. And then I started working on this other project where it was like I was partnering with somebody. It was going to be more long term. But I essentially wasted time and money on that. Paying my bills, not any crazy spending, but just paying my bills. And I guess the part of me is like, well, if I would have gone back, I would have not done those two things. And I would have focused more on marketing myself and promote. But who knows if I would be here right now if I had done that. So that's why I don't like saying regret stuff like that.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of conflate the next couple items here. Usually I say, what's next for you? And I think what's next could be a whole episode with you. So before we sign off, can you just tell us how we can find out more about you? How do we find you? And if there's anything you'd like to share with our listeners. So I'd say words of wisdom, but let's just say, what causes would you like to make people aware of?
I will say, I will give you a little bit of what's next. One thing COVID has taught me is I need to produce stuff myself. So I've been working hard to clear out my basement to actually start doing screen printing and stuff and doing my own artwork that I can sell. I was like, that's something that is a short-term goal for me that I really want to do. I was like, I got to stop relying on people and start relying on myself. So there's the very nugget way of...
So I can bring a high-res file to you and then you can actually... advise me on turning that into some sort of a limited press run or something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then as far as where to find me, feralgiant.com, at feralgiant everywhere on social media. I'd love to get some more followers on Ramblin' Man for the podcast. That's Ramblin' Man with no G pod on Instagram, Twitter, I don't tweet, and Facebook. I would love to get more on those. Causes I would like to give a shout out to. The best nonprofit in this region is Second Harvest Food. I've worked with them for almost 20 years. They are actually at this point, I think 20 years. But they need money over food. Everybody brings them bags of like peanut butter and stuff. They have got it down so well at Second Harvest to where if you give them $10, they can buy $300 worth of stuff. Because they work with like Sysco or food manufacturers on like, here's a pallet full of peanut butter that got bumped, so we can't sell this. So we're going
to. But they need raw capital.
Yes, we're going to buy it at cost.
Yeah. Okay.
And as far as other Big Brothers, Big Sisters, East Tennessee is a great charity. Alzheimer's Association. My grandmother passed away due to Alzheimer's, and that was brutal. A big thing I've been saying, don't just promote black companies now. Do it forever. Stop with this shit of, I gave them $10, now I'm done.
I've relieved my guilt.
Yeah, because I grew up where I was usually the only white dude in the room. And Fulton was 2/3 black when I went to Fulton. So used to being around white people that I used to jokingly, not so much jokingly, be racist against white people. Honkies. Cracker ass crackers. Get these cracker ass crackers out of here. Like just going off. Like, no, it's stupid. So when all that stuff came to be last year, like George Floyd, I have very liberal white friends that were like, I can't believe this. It was like, where have you been? This shit's been happening for decades. So that was with Ramblin' Man. I actually changed a lot of the messaging to be, find a black business and support them. Find a LGBTQ plus business. Support people who are not you. That's the biggest thing. It's like, and listen to people. I always joke that if you don't like gay people, you don't have a gay friend. You've never met a gay person. Because if... Listen to people. And I'm doing the thing I hate on podcasts. I'm smacking. I'm very emphatically like...
Yeah, he's over here drumming on all the furniture.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting amped up.
Thank you so much, Jody.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you being here. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have.
Yeah.
I hope this episode finds somebody out there at just the right time in their own life. And speaking of listeners, to you folks out there, the only thing I ask is if you enjoyed this episode, if this chatter about the unique ways folks end up in the roles is interesting to you, please leave a review, whatever platform that is. And if you feel so inclined, like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're a new podcast, so every bit of exposure helps us grow. Until next time, stay focused on your why.